What happens when a family's pursuit of wealth and security becomes its own prison? The Long Island Compromise explores this question through the Fletcher family, whose outward success masks generations of trauma. Their story begins with Zelig Fletcher, a post-War II immigrant who transforms mathematical aptitude into a thriving packaging business. After discovering Middle Rock's tranquil beauty, he purchases a storm-damaged estate and marries Frida Phyllis Muchnick. Under his influence, Middle Rock flourishes as a haven from persecution, the first American suburb with a half-Jewish population, where immigrants assimilate by adopting WASP aesthetics, founding pool clubs, and transforming themselves into indistinguishable Americans. Their very own promised land, built on compromise. But safety proves illusory. The family's carefully constructed world shatters when Carl Fletcher, Zelig's son, and one of Middle Rock's wealthiest men, is kidnapped from his driveway in 1980. This single act of violence ripples through generations, revealing how money shapes identity but cannot protect against life's most devastating blows. On March 12, 1980, hooded men abducted Carl Fletcher while his pregnant wife Ruth remained unaware until afternoon. The FBI established a command center in their waterfront home where Ruth and Carl's mother anxiously waited as investigators questioned what made the Fletchers kidnappably rich, raising uncomfortable questions about enemies and affairs. Days later, a filtered voice claiming to represent the Caliphate freedom fighters demanded $250,000, stating Carl was half dead with missing fingers. Following FBI guidance, Ruth made the ransom drop with her young son. After confusion between airports, she returned home to learn Carl had been found unharmed. The terrorist claims were fabricated. Police arrested Drexel Abraham, an ex-convict from Carl's factory, and later his brother. Most shocking was that Carl had been held in his own factory's basement. Though physically recovered, Carl remained psychologically damaged. The hood created lasting disorientation, leaving him unable to access pre-trauma memories. His life became divided. Everything before was precursor, everything after was aftermath. Despite appearances, Carl remained haunted, convinced danger still lurked. Nathan Fletcher faces crisis when his giant supermarket project stalls. Town official Lewis Squibb clearly expects a bribe during their lunch meeting. Nathan takes an uncharacteristic risk, suggesting a fake charity where he could deposit money for Lewis to use for homeless people, however you decide. His scheme backfires. He's placed on unpaid administrative leave after being recorded attempting bribery. Simultaneously, childhood friend Mickey, who managed millions of Nathan's money, is exposed running a Ponzi scheme. Investigator Gal Plotkin delivers the blow. Your money is gone. The family styrofoam factory proves unsellable due to outdated equipment and environmental violations. A liability, requiring millions in compliance costs rather than the legacy Nathan expected. His home life deteriorates as renovations reveal asbestos, forcing his family to relocate to his grandmother's empty house. Financial deception weighs on him as he contemplates confessing everything to his wife Alyssa, who's focused on their son's upcoming bar mitzvah. At night, his grandmother haunts his dreams, a spectral reminder of his failures. Bernard Beamer Fletcher appears to have escaped the family's psychological issues through Hollywood success. Yet, beneath his achievements lies dysfunction. After paying a psychic $10,000 to clear his third eye, he spirals into creative obsession. While ignoring messages about his daughter's school troubles, Beamer experiences a manic episode, envisioning a screenplay about a kidnapped boy whose father is the kidnapper, a role for Mandy Patinkin. His breakdown culminates with him showing up disoriented at Patinkin's home before collapsing as his car rolls down the driveway. Before this, Beamer had attempted reform, paying off his dominatrix, deleting drug dealers' contacts, and ending BDSM sessions. He established healthy routines with early mornings and family dinners. He embraced fatherhood, telling his daughter, "If you work hard on something, the road will rise up to meet you." Yet, when his therapist asked about happiness, he dismissed it. "If it doesn't exist, it can't be on the agenda," a philosophy that contributed to his downfall. Jennifer "Jenny" Fletcher, born after her father's kidnapping, embodies family resilience and contradiction. Despite her brilliant mind, Jenny rebels against her family's wealth and privilege. On graduation night, she refused her celebration, dismissing it as bullshit to celebrate something literally everyone could accomplish. She immediately left for a Prague art internship, telling her mother, "I'm not an animal, this is not a zoo." As an adult, Jenny avoids Middle Rock friends, finding their lives a mockery of bourgeois boredom. She lectures her family about workers' rights being an American value, to her grandmother's dismay. Jenny's radicalization deepens after learning about Glenn Finkelstein's death, her father's friend who committed fraud to fund his daughter's music career. After her academic boyfriend discovers her wealth and insults her, Jenny begins funding unions and anti-Yale initiatives. Yet she realizes giving away wealth differs from never having it. During a confrontation with Beamer, his suggestion that her activism stems from rebellion rather than conviction begins to unravel her worldview. After confronting uncomfortable truths about her family, Jenny experiences semantic evacuation, a profound psychological state where familiar concepts lose their meaning. This crisis manifests professionally as she abandons her union position where she once felt purposeful. The ideals that drove her now seem hollow and disconnected from reality. Her isolation becomes both symptom and coping mechanism. Jenny attempts to find meaning through art by setting up a home studio, but can't create anything meaningful. Even grocery shopping becomes overwhelming as her framework of normal life dissolves. The video game Mogul becomes her primary escape, offering a simplified simulation where players earn points for maintaining routines and relationships. Despite its libertarian philosophy contradicting her former leftist beliefs, she becomes addicted to its ordered world. When Jenny discovers her trust fund has evaporated, she experiences an almost transcendent relief. The money that once served as both safety net and burden is gone, creating a plastic hour, a rare moment where fundamental change becomes possible. The Long Island Compromise portrays the bargain struck by Fletcher generations, trading authentic identity for safety and prosperity. Zelig assimilated to escape persecution. Carl chose financial security over emotional health. Nathan maintained perfect appearances while sacrificing integrity. Jenny performed rebellion while still enjoying wealth's privileges. Each compromise exacted its price. Zelig achieved the American dream but remained haunted by family left behind. Carl built an empire but lost himself after the kidnapping. Nathan's impeccable suburban life collapsed under financial strain. Beamer found Hollywood success but spiraled into self-destruction. Jenny rejected materialism yet struggled to establish meaningful alternatives. The novel suggests these compromises, while inevitable in the immigrant experience, carry profound consequences. Pursuing safety through wealth creates its own vulnerabilities: psychological damage from suppressed identity, ethical compromises, and spiritual emptiness money cannot fill. The Fletcher saga reveals how wealth shapes identity but cannot protect against life's devastating blows. What safety do we sacrifice for? Perhaps our most valuable inheritance isn't wealth, but the courage to face fears without compromising our true selves.